Okay, so Genesis 19 is going to be our class tonight. And first off, just want to thank you all for being here tonight. Also, thank the elders for setting up this series to give us time to teach on this chapter and go through it. I feel like I'm the lucky one because I've had two really extraordinary chapters to do. Chapter 4, I think, was my first one, which was the first sin. And then apparently when Oliver came around, I kept with this theme of sin and great challenges with Sodom and Gomorrah now in chapter 19. So I thought it would be a lot more fun, but it is actually very interesting and a fascinating chapter. Some of it is obviously difficult to deal with, and we'll try to deal with some of that here tonight. So I broke it up into the three sections here. We have angels that appear in the first section, 1 through 22. God destroys Sodom and Gomorrah, and that'll be in verses 23 through 29. And then Lot and his daughters at the end of the chapter, verses 30 through 38. I wanted to put up a map here to kind of give an idea of what the lay of the land is. We have Sodom sitting here and Gomorrah right here. Of course, we don't exactly know where they were. And can somebody tell me why we don't know exactly where they were? They were completely destroyed. That's correct. So this kind of gives you just an idea of where they think it is, because they talk about this crest in some of the commentaries and also in some other information that I came across why they think it might be there. Also, there's two names upon here, the Ammon and Moab. This is kind of a pretest since Acts class is getting us prepped for that. Anybody know the significance of those two names at this time? Children of Lot. Children of Lot, right. This will come at the end here of verses 30 through 38. Okay, so let's start off doing a little bit of reading here. We do have this angels appearing. So let me read the first three verses here in chapter 19. Actually, Rex, this goes into one of our questions. The two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed himself with his face to the earth. And he said, "My lords, please turn aside to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise up early and go your way." And they said, "No, we will spend the night in the town square." But he pressed them strongly. So they turned aside to him and entered his house. And he said, And he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. I almost feel like I missed a sentence there I made up, but I know you're following along. So with angels here, I obviously have this really nice depiction here of angels with wings. How do we know that, or how did Lot know that they were angels? I like how Hudson's ready to go with the microphone. Well, it is a good question, because there really isn't any explanation for it, right? How many other times have there been an angel or an angel presence to this point? I gave you the answer. Just once, right? And this actually happened Genesis 16. I say once because this is kind of the ongoing theme of when an angel was recognized. Abraham did in chapter 19, so I think that is supposed to be Genesis 19, so my typo. But really, there hasn't been a lot of occurrences of angels here. So for Lot to recognize that this was an angel, something had to miraculously happen, right? Because otherwise, why didn't anybody else know that these were angels? Because we'll see in the rest of the story, really no one had any other ideas that these were angelic beings. So I think that's kind of an interesting call out. So how did he know? No idea. Why was Lot sitting at the gate? Hudson, be ready. He was. Good. Yeah, he was a type of official or judge for the city. So he had a fairly significant role in the city itself and the ins and outs of what goes on in it. And sitting in the gate is really where the city officials would have conducted a lot of these activities. Now, we know this was at night. So does that draw any conclusion? Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah.
How can we be sure that Lot knew that they were angels and not just people, not just visitors?
Well, he did phrase it as my lords. So I think he was, from that context, at least recognizing that they were of significance, right? They were greater than him, for one.
Later on down the road,
he does figure it out, yeah.
And later on down the road, I don't assume that the people of Sodom are going to know that they're anything other than just two new people that have come to town.
Right. I am taking this phrase, and from just my other research, I guess I am going out on a limb by saying, by him saying there were lords, that he'd recognize them as angels. Also because the very first verse, the two angels came to Sodom, and then he uses that phrase of my lords. I was putting that together. So that could be my error. That could be my error. Yep.
I get to just comment. I mean, if he knew that they're angels, I don't know if I would make them something to eat, because you would assume that they probably might
well,
not
it's,
eat.
Well, it's still a fairly
food.
New experience sure. with angels. Right, and in chapter 18, when Kyle went over it, Kyle, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they made them food as well. So it seems to be that it's a recognition of somewhat of a human figure, making the assumption of how do I become hospitable? And there's only a couple different ways that they would have known how to do that, even if it was an angel in a human form. It was probably their culture just to recognize that this is somebody and they probably need to eat and not really understand it. And I don't know that I can actually answer this question or any of us, right? Because none of us have met angels that we know of. And we probably did offer them food if we didn't know that they were. It's a fair point. I'm assuming he knew they were angels up front. If he didn't, he is obviously going to figure that out here fairly short. But he did recognize them as, at minimal, guests, and he recognized them as probably somebody of a higher level than he was. Okay. Why did the angels say they would sleep on the streets or in the courtyard?
I don't know. I just have a guess that they probably didn't have like hotels back then. So I think it's probably pretty common that they, you know. Oh, there you go.
You read my notes.
Yeah, I didn't read I just think it's probably common that that's where the people would sleep.
Yes, this was very common. That two things happened here, and I'm going to draw a conclusion to one of them, because Lot is here at night, right? He is actually waiting at the gate, and this is in the evening time. So one of the traditions of that time is because there wasn't hotels. If people came into town, that you would offer them a place to stay. And those individuals generally were hoping that they could find accommodations in somebody's house. And Lot could have been his role in the town, his job, or one of his duties, that as people came into the town in the evening needing a place to stay, he could offer it. The other thought is, in addition, it's still... For anybody traveling and they didn't come across somebody offering that, they literally would sleep somewhere in the street. So it was not uncommon. It wasn't something that, you know, you would have seen and said, oh, wow, that's like downtown Seattle in a tent and there's just bums laying on the street. No, that's not how it was at all. It was very common for that to happen. It was not Pioneer Square, correct. Okay. So let's go on here to the next section, verses 4 through 11. Does anybody want to read it? I know that means Hudson would need to run around, but is there somebody willing to read it? I can. It's not a problem. I have it right here. Randy? Great.
But before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man, surrounded the house. And they called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them." Lot went out to the men at the entrance, shut the door after him, and said, "I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any man. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof." But they said, "Stand back." And they said, "This fellow came to sojourn, and he has become a judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them." Then they pressed hard against the man Lot and drew near to break the door down. But the men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, both small and great, so that they wore themselves out groping for the door.
Thank you. Okay, so here we have this as a slight reflection of going back to Genesis 18, when we were talking about how many would it take for God not to destroy the city, right? So we went through the 50 to the 45, all the way down to 10. And at this point in time, Lot in his house has all the men of the city. Now, when we say 50 or 45 people, I mean, there's probably 40-ish here tonight in total, roughly. Does that give you the idea that the city is large or small initially? In my mind, it kind of depicts it as a fairly small city. However, if we look at it, the actual population people have estimated is somewhere around 500,000 between the two cities. So now that number, when you start to think all of the men, young and old, were surrounding Lot's house. This becomes a very different situation and kind of a scarcity issue, where we're not talking about just 50 people at your door pounding on your door. There's potentially thousands that are at your door, which really kind of puts into perspective, how would you feel? How would Lot feel? He has these two men that he's brought into his house as sojourners and travelers. He put them under his care, and now he has pretty much half the city asking to take these men away and to get to know them. I think it just helps us to put into context kind of the situation itself and what Lot was actually facing at that moment, because I think sometimes you can quickly overlook that and think, oh, there was probably, 10 or 15 people at the door. No, we're talking hundreds, thousands, multiple thousands. And this phrase, get to know them, unfortunately, this phrase and how it's used here is more of a sexual nature, not your casual conversation. They did not want to know where they came from, what they did for a living, who their friends were, who their parents, all that kind of stuff. This was pretty kind of disgusting and sad that there would even be this statement about two individuals who are new into the town. And in fact, the word sodomy is directly derived from Sodom as the city itself. So that's where that actual word comes from. And so I want you to reflect just a little bit from chapter 18 and verse 20, and this is what really started to stick in my mind when I think from when we study that class. We heard in chapter 18, verse 20, that the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great. So God had heard about how bad it was and part of this outcry. And so if you were individuals traveling through this particular city, and let's just say this happened to you, you can understand that outcry. And I think it goes back to that chapter and saying what that outcry could have actually meant or been a part of. Yes?
So along those same lines, I don't know that we know the answer to this, but I'll ask you the question anyway, since you've studied it. And I don't know if the, other commentators say. But do you think this is a normal practice? I would assume it's somewhat normal for them, like what Sodom did when visitors came to town at night? Or is this, because it seems like with Lot's initial reaction, like let's get inside quickly, it seems like that's what it seems. I'm inferring a lot of things that are not written there. But that's the way I read it, and I wonder what your take
is. So if you're saying, was it normal as far as the men of the city going out and searching for newcomers? Is that the normalcy that you're referring to?
This action was not something that was unusual just to this circumstance, but it was something.
I'm going to say by Lot's response and also from what we know about Sodom and Gomorrah and its sins, and it's not just from the sexual side of it either, because I'll show some other scriptures later that supports the other issues that Sodom and Gomorrah had as well. But I think Lot knew that this was going to be a problem. So I think it happened probably enough. And if you were to get a collection of individuals just on a random basis, how long would that normally take you? Right? I mean, Lot almost immediately got to his house, probably within the hour had thousands of people at his door. So that kind of leads me to believe that probably is something that was fairly common. Sadly and disturbingly. I would at least say it happened more than once. Okay? Is that anybody else? Okay. Good, because these are tough things to kind of put in our mind and even just try to think upon. It's rough. Let's see. So we did talk about the outcry. Let's go on here. Lot pleads with the men of the city, do not act so wickedly. And again, I think this goes maybe back a little bit to your point too. Is he's trying to remind them as his role that they shouldn't act so wickedly. So this type of behavior is something that has already been called out before that they should recognize is wicked, that he's probably taught them because God has recognized him as a faithful individual, that he's probably tried to teach them and he's probably tried to get them out of this sin or these types of sin. So I think this is his way of remembering what we've talked about. Don't be so wicked. It doesn't work. And then in this sense, it gets a little bit, I'll just say stranger, offering his own daughters. You know, how could he offer his own daughters? And I think this is sometimes very difficult also for us as Westerners to understand because we're trying to relate to, hey, I have two daughters and a son. Many of us have had children, sons, daughters. This is not something that we could comprehend from any stretch of the imagination. But I also know that we're very tainted and biased towards the Western culture. But if you look at this type of culture, even somewhat today in the Middle East, some things that'll probably shock you still is women can't vote. A lot of times they can't even speak publicly and they can't drive a car. Another thing is in some of those countries, they cannot even walk outside alone without the company of a man. And so this kind of, at least even today, tries to kind of, we think of men and women being equal. There are societies that do not. It's not that they're not loved, but it's that they are ranked differently, right, wrong, or indifferent. And in this society, we know, even during Lot's time, this type of offering in somebody's mind would make sense. I'm struggling with it because it doesn't make sense to me. I'm not even sure I could offer them anything. If I was in that situation and, you know, I'd be like, sorry, you're not getting my daughters, that's not an option. I wouldn't even offer my dog. So it's just like, don't even do this. I'll make you a hamburger or whatever, but just go away. Yes.
Like in Arab countries, I know in Iraq, just this week, a young woman went to her husband that she was betrothed to at a young age and said she was going to get a divorce and he killed her.
Yeah.
And it was legal.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually watching some stuff, and my wife knows this because I was trying to give her some insights a little bit, too, with Dubai. And that's where one of the things I was talking about, that women can't actually walk outside by themselves. They can't wear certain attire. They can't talk outside. They can't be alone. They have to be accompanied by somebody at all times, and it has to be a male, whether their father, their husband, their brother, somebody. They are not allowed to speak, walk alone.
It has to be a male relative.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I was just trying to say, like, brother or uncle or somebody. Somebody related to them. So it is hard for us to say, well, you know, how could he do this? But the other thing I would suggest is this: he had two angels with him at the same time. And if you know you're within godly presence, I'm not saying it's right, but I'm thinking maybe in some ways that he thought God would be able to take care of it. I have angels. I'm willing to do anything to protect these men from God, and I'm willing to bet that God will do what's right or make it right or, you know, have the best possible outcome. And that's really the only two options that I can think of as far as how anybody could really do that. And the last thing I would say is, you know, it hasn't come up yet, but we know even with Abraham and Isaac, how could any man kill his own son? Especially as we look at, that's going to come up in chapter 22, but, you know, God told him to kill his only son that was supposed to have the promise. And so none of that made sense to him, but what was Abraham's thought process in that?
God will provide.
God will provide. So God had a plan, and he was just trusting. And that's really the best way that I can explain it. I haven't heard anybody that really had a super answer, because so much of it is going to be speculation and just trying to best understand it as you could. So that's all I'm going to say about it. Is that fair? Okay. The other interesting point here is the men pressed to overtake Lot, and the two men pulled him back into the house. And I think this is, again, where we really do find out that these are angels, because they struck the door and everybody outside became blind. So even if Lot didn't understand yet how angelic or how godly these individuals were, that really did remove all doubt, because that would be a miracle to have that happen. So I'm talking just ahead of myself. This is the way I keep myself on time. So. All right, let's go to this. We're going to hit verses 12. Any other volunteers, since we have a mic? Anybody? Anybody? 12 through 22, right. Please.
Then the two men said to Lot, "Whom else have you here? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and whomever you have in the city, bring them out of the place. For we are about to destroy this place, because their outcry has become so great before the Lord that the Lord has sent us to destroy it." Lot went out and spoke to his son-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, and said, Get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he appeared to the sons-in-laws to be jesting. What did you say? 22. When morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Up, take your wife and your daughters, your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away in the punishment of the city." But he hesitated. So the men seized his hand and the hand of his wife and the hands of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him. And they brought him out and put him outside the city. When they had brought them outside, one said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind you, and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains, or you will be swept away." But Lot said to them, "Oh no, my lords. Now behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have magnified your loving kindness, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, for the disaster will overtake me, and I will die. Now behold, this town is near enough to flee to, and it is small. Please let me escape there. It is not small. that my life may be saved. He said to him, Behold, I grant you this request also, not to overthrow the town of which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the town was called Zor.
Thank you. Okay, so this is where we get some revelation here. So why were the angels there? Destroy, right. So we know right there in the very first verse, chapter 12, not the first verse, but the first verse that we just read, verse 12, 13 actually, for we are about to destroy this place. Verse 13, I mean, it kind of removes all doubt for us when we read this, why the angels were there. We don't understand how that's going to happen, and I think that's probably a difficult thing for Lot and his family. He knows that he's being rushed out, so it's something of a particular urgent situation, and the angels there are really pressing him to go get your family and get out. So in this particular verse as well, we also understand that Lot had a little bit bigger family than what he had living in his house, because he had son-in-laws, which he spoke to. So he had other daughters, and he potentially had grandchildren. It doesn't say that. I'm going to make some assumptions, but in here, he at least had other daughters because he had sons-in-laws. What is gesturing? I want to read another Ezekiel 16. Let's turn there real quick. Sorry. I think this is, I'll read this one so you don't have to Hudson run around. Ezekiel 16, 46 is where we'll start. Okay. And your elder sisters in Samaria, who lived with her daughters to the north of you, and your younger sister who lived in the south of you, is Sodom with her daughters. Not only did you walk in their ways and do according to their abominations, within a very little time you were more corrupt than they were in all of their ways. As I live, declares the Lord God, your sister Sodom and her daughters have not done as you and your daughters have done. Behold, this was the guilt of your sisters in Sodom. She and her daughters had pride, excess of food, possession, prosperous ease, did not aid the poor and needy. They were haughty and did as an abomination before me, so I removed them when I saw it. I think this is kind of interesting in the aspect that Sodom and Gomorrah wasn't the only bad place, right? This clearly depicts the conversation of something that was worse than Sodom and Gomorrah, but when you read this, what did it not include as part of Sodom's sins?
It didn't include homosexuality.
It didn't include anything of the sexual immorality that was going on, right? Which is kind of interesting because it talks about how bad this place is. It's even worse than Sodom, but didn't even bring up the particular situation with Lot and having men at the door wanting to have improper sexual relations with other men. So it's just kind of interesting as we go through this, and we see how God ends up dealing with Sodom, but he was actually having another conversation here of, there is another place that is worse, and I'm going to deal with it. And I think this kind of gives us, if we look at it, some assurances that God does have everything handled. He doesn't necessarily do it in our time. We can see sin, and we can recognize it, and we can be appalled by it, and we can have our cries heard, and God will deal with it. Maybe not when we want him to, maybe not when we think think it needs to be done. But God has proven to us over and over again he'll deal with it. And again, in Ezekiel, he's saying, I'm going to. I've done it once, and I'll do it again. So I just wanted to read that because I find it somewhat comforting, but also disturbing that there were worse places than Sodom and Gomorrah, which is kind of amazing too. But anyway, so in verse 14, he went out and approached his brother-in-laws, and the word gesturing comes up. Anybody know what that means? Yeah, yeah. Said or done for amusement or joking. So Lot's own family didn't even believe what was about to happen. So Lot, you know, went out and said, hey, we got to go. Get your things. We got to leave now. And they couldn't even understand it. Do we know any other Genesis biblical, I'll say individuals that were trying to get people to believe damnation was coming? And Noah, perfect. Yeah. And how long did he have to try to convince people to get on board, literally? Yeah, 120 years. So it is interesting that humans are going to be humans. Kind of like when we talked about on the Lord's Supper talk here last Sunday, you know, you have two choices. You can turn to God or you can turn away from God. And these individuals obviously had it set in their heart that they were not willing to follow God and just didn't believe what was going to happen. And we're going to run into that in our daily lives as well. And that's a difficult thing, especially when we see it and what we believe. But we're not the only ones that have ever been turned down about God's plan or salvation or how to be saved. Lot appeals to flee to another city rather than the hills. Why do you think that is? Closer, okay. Maybe one reason, yeah. Let me ask you, where would you rather go? To a city or a hill? And live in a cave? A city, yeah. I mean, if going to Zorah, I'm sure he has probably had the thought process, there will be accommodations, there will be readily available food, water, other people, you know, at least it is a civilization, whereas I don't want to go to a cave. I mean, that's, for me, that's kind of like camping. Why would I want to do that? I'd rather have access to running water, food, shelter, nice bed, right? So I would imagine that was probably it, but who knows? No one really knows for sure, but I certainly know why, at least in the beginning, I would say something similar. And as we know, the angels granted his request and actually did say, you know, hurry, you got to get there because we can't do our thing until you get there. And so that ends that section here. And now we get into verses 23 through 29. Do I have another victim? I mean, volunteer. I'm still turning there, so if I get there first, I'll go. Don't make me do it. All right, I'm doing it. Oh, I got it. I got it. All right, verses 19, or 23 through 29. The sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zorah. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah sulfur and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those in the city and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But Lot's wife behind him looked back and she became a pillar of salt. And Abraham went early into the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord and looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley and looked and behold, the smoke of the land went up as a smoke of a furnace. So for that, when God destroyed the cities of the valley, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out to the midst to overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had lived. Okay, so we actually have the physical destruction here. And one of the things I wanted to kind of just give some context to, because I think this is kind of interesting. It's always fun to find things where archaeologists and scientists have actually come together to kind of try to understand or try to prove out the Bible. So I found an article from 2018 in Forbes magazine, of all places, that the archaeologist Philip J. Sylvia. So he's been working on a site, which is why that map in the very beginning was put up, that he believes is Sodom and Gomorrah. And he has found what essentially looks like a meteor hit and destroyed the city. And it hit the middle of the city in particular. And it had an effect of over 200 square miles of that whole valley and city area. So when we look at that, I'll try to give all of it too. But in the scripture, it even suggested this. It stripped the soil of all agricultural value. So from just the high intensity and the heat from that strike of a meteor or something similar, right? I'm not saying it's necessarily a meteor, but this is from a science point of view, what could have happened. A shockwave would have been sent superheated brine of the Dead Sea salts throughout the area, which also would kill all vegetation and wouldn't be able to sustain it. And they figure it took at least six centuries, so 600 years, for that area to actually recover agriculturally. And so I find it fascinating, then when we reread verse 25, and he overthrew the cities and all of the valley, and all the inhabitants of all the cities and what grew on the ground. So from what this individual had actually studied, what actually fit some of that category? Because all the ground was destroyed from vegetation, all inhabitants, there's no, you know, bones even in this area, but they can tell a city at some point was there. So I think it's just kind of interesting, and it's fun to see sometimes this come together and be able to really say, yeah, that actually did happen. And what would that actually have looked like? And then in verse 28, just to kind of reemphasize, you know, because he looked, it says here in 28, and he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley and looked, and behold, smoke on the land went up, the smoke of a furnace. So it was hot. I mean, it literally destroyed massive amounts of area. Now, this article just kind of reflects how it could have definitely looked if it was a particular event like a meteor. I know God didn't say he sent a meteor, but it is something that he obviously very easily could have done if that's the way he wanted to do it. Verse 26, again, just to kind of emphasize, but this is always kind of interesting to me. Before I ask this, does anybody know Lot's name or Lot's wife's name? No, we don't. It wasn't ever given. The strangest thing to kind of look at this is all we ever knew of Lot and his wife. Verse 26, what made her famous, but Lot's wife behind him looked back and she became a pillar of salt. For what very little we know of her, what child in any of these classes doesn't know how Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt as, right? I mean, it's something very easy for them to remember, but this is all that will really be remembered of her. And sadly, it's all based on not following God's instruction. Because what was the one thing that they weren't supposed to do? Don't look back. And it's amazing, as humans, at times we try to justify certain things, little things, that even though we know we're not supposed to do it, we do it anyway. Because it doesn't seem like a big deal. But in this particular case, I can somewhat feel for her, because they did leave family behind. At the end of the day, Lot's wife left some of her children behind. Not saying it's right, not saying it was the proper thing to do, but when we try to understand the human side, she left her home, she left part of her family, and all that she ever knew. And it's sad, it's a sad ending to it, but That can happen when you don't listen to God's instruction. So now we get into, is any questions on that? Yes, in the back. Hudson, run.
So not necessarily a question, but a thought.
Yeah.
And this may be a stretch, but I think in the past when I read the story, I've always kind of thought about, yeah, that she looked back because, you know, of what she was leaving behind. But in reading through it this time, I was kind of pondering, I was like, well, if the city was so bad, why had Lot not already left Sodom and Gomorrah, right? If it's, mm-hmm. if it's such an evil city and he's following God. And I almost wonder if this is one of those cases, like with Solomon, of being unequally yoked. If his wife wasn't the driving force and wanting to stay, and she was the real pull in that city, and in her looking back, it was showing that she had all these ties with this city and with all that that entailed, and so that, and that is even part of this loss.
Right? Yeah, I mean, that's certainly, I mean, it's all speculation, and that could have been, and that's why I kind of, the closest thing I could put to that is that they had family there, right? And that's what kept them there. Even being in a bad place, if you're still wanting to try to have that hope of rather saving your children or keeping your children and family safe and trying to follow God's ways, that's the reason you would stay instead of abandoning your kids if the kids didn't want to move. But it's all a guess, and all we know about her is the one thing that she did. So I can't say that she had a lot of influence over him or anybody else.
When Abraham and Lot split up, they split everything in half. And he had a lot of.
Well, again, he had a significant role in the city as well, which also could have also been why he stayed. All right, so Lot and his daughters. This is going to be kind of difficult. I'll read it quickly. Now Lot went up out of Zoar and lived in the hills with his two daughters. So first he went there and then said, nope, I'm out. I'm going to go to the hills now. For he was afraid to live in Zoar. So he lived in a cave with his two daughters. And the first said to the younger, the father is old, and there is not another man on earth to come into us in the matter of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, and we will, that we may preserve our offspring. I'm even having trouble reading this. I'm trying to read it quick just because I don't want to. Why didn't any of you volunteer? offspring from our father. So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father. He did not know when she lay down or when she arose. The next day, the firstborn said to the younger, behold, I lay last night with our father. Let us make him drink wine tonight also. Then you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve the offspring from our father. So they made their father drink wine that night. They arose. It's the same thing. Thus both daughters and Lot became pregnant. Lot's daughters became pregnant by their father. The firstborn bore a son named Moab, and he is the father of the Moabs to this day. The younger also bore a son, and his name Ben-Ami, and is the father of the Amorites to this day. So how can this be explained? And I'll go through a couple possible explanations. Again, this is going to be somewhat speculation. They were in this particular society. And in this particular society, I think it's safe to say it would have an effect on you. And it even does for us today in what we learn and how we act and how we dress. I mean, everything from evolution, divorce, language, dress, attire, you know, things being acceptable, smoking, drinking, drugs, you name it, right? So they were certainly in a society that had its fair share of wrongful doings. Jude, verse 7, I'll go there because I think this is actually an important verse here, which helps us. Jude 1, verse 7, my iPad is going slow. just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the surrounding cities, which likewise indulging in sexual immorality and pursued unnatural desires, serve as an example by undergoing a punishment of eternal fire. I put this in here because, again, this is kind of, it shows what society life was like in that particular city. I know, you know, we look at things and we hear things in the news from Christianity schools teaching homosexual activity is okay. We have government saying, oh, let's just lower punishment and that should reduce crime. There's all kinds of different theories that we hear in our society that there are a lot of people that end up believing and that it's okay. But I think probably the better explanation for this, just from their reaction, is the destruction was so bad that they probably literally believed they were the only ones left on earth at that time. Because for all that valley, all the city, everywhere that they could have seen, really had an enormous amount of effect. And I don't know how young they were. I'm assuming they were fairly young because they were unmarried. And a justification would be, look, there's no one left on earth, which they actually kind of alluded to. So if there was no one left on earth, I guess that's how you could try to justify it. I'm not trying to. I'm just trying to get into their minds a little bit about what in the world could they have thought of. Because there was a large amount of this area that would have been affected. And again, in verse 30, the word of mouth, because he became afraid to stay in the city, word got around that this enormous event in Sodom and Gomorrah, it blew it away. It's gone. And really, since he was the only one, which he would have been fairly known, he knew about the city, so rather he had been to the city, had trade with the city of some sort, it wasn't far away, probably was known, and now all of a sudden he's the only survivor, him and his two daughters, from Sodom and Gomorrah. And the city would have said, look, get out. I don't want this to happen to us. Move on. And that was probably his thinking on that as well. So hard to justify, but it's trying to learn something from it. It was part of God's plan at the end of the day. We don't know all of God's plan or how it all gets put together, but it is. So what I thought I would do here, real towards the end, is to kind of give the magnitude of when we talk about 200 square miles, what that actually would look like. So up here, if it was the middle of Georgia, the state of Georgia, there is about five states that potentially could have been affected or felt the ramifications of, if it was a meteor-esque event, that is the area that would have had some kind of effect at. So it would have been known in a very large area, something major catastrophe had happened. For this particular area, I couldn't find it perfectly ideally, but this is a 175-mile radius. So just to give kind of an idea of if that type of catastrophic event occurred, that's how much area would have felt an effect in some way. Earth being shooken, cloud cover, smell, temperature, all kinds of possibilities. Water in this particular area, tidal wave type effect could have hit the other areas, just depending on how close to the water. I mean, we're talking about a fairly significant event. So I just kind of wanted to help kind of put that in perspective of how it may have come to light. We talk about in verse 24, you know, the sulfur, the fire, the brimstone. Here's how I'm trying to get to that point, and I have about a minute. So a meteorite, when it enters the atmosphere, friction, gas, pressure cause it to heat up and become a meteor or fireball, which would have looked like falling particles of fire and brimstone as it entered Earth's atmosphere and got closer to impact. So you can see how that maybe God used something very similar to that kind of event to actually wipe out those two cities in that valley. And that's just how people are kind of coming across to saying, well, maybe it was something of a meteor event. Doesn't mean it was. I'm not going to sell you on it. But let's end on 2 Peter 2, 6 through 9. And I have it up here so no one else has to read it. And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them with an overthrow, making them a sample unto those that after should live ungodly. And deliver just Lot, vexed with filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them is seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. The Lord knoweth how to deliver godly out of temptation and to reserve the unjust until the day of judgment to be punished. And I think this wraps up part of the question of why did he stay? God knew that he was just. God understood how this was, how it was vexing his soul, how it was affecting him, but that he would deliver out of temptation and the unjust would get their judgment. And that's just really for us to also understand, because we do live in a complex society where there's all kinds of injustice going on. And I think if we refer back to 2 Peter 2 here, this should give us some comfort in that the God knoweth and how to deliver the ungodly out of temptation. So if we put our faith in him, like Lot did, we could take some comfort in that. So with that, I close. Thank you. Any questions or comments, please just email, because we don't have time. No. If you got anything quick, I'm happy to hear it. I don't guarantee I have any answers, especially in the last part there, but I thank you for your time and patience.